Welcome back to the E-Team Sponsor Podcast. I'm Sean Connors, co-founder and CEO with E-Team Sponsor. Pleasure to be joined today on our podcast by Bob Lattiser, former head football coach at De La Salle High School. Coach Lattiser, thanks for coming on today.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Well, lots changed in the world in the last handful of months. How have things changed, I guess, over at De La Salle? And how are they dealing with all these changes in terms of the pandemic?
Well, it's fluid like it is everywhere else. It seems to change every week. And they've got multiple plans going right now that are taking care of whatever the situation's going to be. At home schooling, amended schedules, all sorts of stuff. And, you know, our school was on top of it pretty well at the beginning. I mean, at the end of the school year, we got a lot of capable people. We got our own tech team and everything. And they did a great job of making that transition from school to home. And yeah, we finished out the school year pretty strong, I thought.
Great. That's great. What's kind of been the feedback from the coaching, I'd say the coaches and the teaching standpoint in terms of, students being able to, in the past, have been able to come on campus to go through kind of that, initial or freshman orientation and things like that. I guess, what are some of the changes that you guys are looking at having to make this year with, online and things like that?
Well, Justin's been doing a lot of that. I mean, I'm not involved in it anymore, but I've been talking to him, and they're doing a lot of virtual lessons and film work, all sorts of different things, online. And then, they've been able to recently get pods out there for conditioning and weight training. They're outside. They're in teams of pods of 12 kids.
Okay.
Social distanced, and they're outdoors. So, they're getting it done, but it's kind of painstaking and sure, it's drawbacks for sure. But, they're still working on the kids and trying to get them stronger and faster and more able. And so, and it's still up in the air for them too. They have no idea really what's going to be happening down the road.
And it's good. It crazy. We were talking about this with some of our coaches internally within the company, but some of our clients as well, that with the start of the season being pushed back to December, this almost feels like we're in January again. We have such a long road to go before they can even get back to getting on the field again. And but it's great to hear that at least the CIF has extended kind of those summer rules, if you will, and allowing teams to at least practice and 7-on-7 and those types of things, so they can at least get some work in leading up to the new start of the season in December. So
they get checked in every day for their temperature and how they're feeling and all that stuff, and they have all the rules in place about congregating and masks and all that stuff. So it's pretty tight, but they're still getting work in, which is good.
That's great. Well, good. Well, Coach, we'll dive in a little bit. Obviously, you had an incredible career. Be great to share with coaches and athletic directors across the country at the high school level that are going to be watching this and listening to this, and share a little bit about your story. And hopefully that inspires some people to go out and lead and work in a similar fashion. So we'll kind of go take a trip down memory lane today and have some fun. But first, I'd say, Coach, what was it about teaching, specifically the academic experience, that really drew you to want to go to De La Salle and embark upon that career?
I wanted to go to De La Salle primarily because I thought I'd have a little bit more latitude as to what I'd be allowed to do. And, I graduated from San Jose State, and I was working at Juvenile Hall for 2 years, but I was on a swing shift. And that's what I originally wanted to do, but I kind of switched gears once I got into it and thought, well, I don't know if I want to do this my entire life. So I went back to school at St. Mary's. I fulfilled the requirements for a religious studies degree, and I was taking those courses just out of interest, just to keep myself busy. When I was working, everybody was off, and when when I, wasn't working, everybody else was working. So I just didn't want to sit around and do nothing. So for 2 years, I studied there, and I really enjoyed it. And then I read in the paper that Ed Hall was retiring from De La Salle football. In the meantime, too, I coached it. I coached 1 year at Monta Vista High School, the defensive backs and running backs. And, you know, most of my work, too, was on the weekends. So it was okay. You know, I missed maybe one day of practice a week. But, you know, it was something that came up, I never thought I had a chance to get the job. I just thought, well, I'll apply for it anyway. Because they were looking for a teacher and a coach. And I went through the interview process and they hired me. So they took a chance on me. I was 24 at the time. And, you know, they didn't have any high expectations for me or the football program. So it was, you know, they just rolled the dice and said, what the hell? And it worked out for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll say. Yeah, looking back to, you know, I guess it'll lead me to my next question is, you know, you look back and say, okay, yeah, you're 24, 25 years old. You're starting your first head coaching experience at De La Salle back in 1979. You know, thinking of maybe first-year coaches that are listening to this or watching this, if a man or a woman had walked into your office now and said, hey, coach, I'm going to be a first-time head football coach at a school, knowing what you know now, what would you tell them? Where would you tell them to start?
Well, you know, they had never had a winning season when I got in there. And in fact, they were pretty bad. I mean, the whole program was like starting from zero. We didn't have a weight room. We didn't have weights at all. And, you know, they had no off-season program. Summer was, I think, hit and miss. Wasn't mandatory or anything like that. So I came from two great programs, you know, as far as my own experience. San Ramon High School, I played for a great coach there, Fred Houston. And then San Jose State, I played for Daryl Rogers down there, and he had a great staff. And they were good at, they were good teachers. They were good coaches. And I understood a lot of it. I had a natural feel for the game as far as, you know, what was required. I knew both of my programs I played in had an off-season lifting. And in high school in 71, 72, that was kind of unheard of. We had a weight room and we had a weight program. And that helped me personally as an athlete tremendously. I understood and experienced how much better you could be if you prepare and you do an off-season program. And each year I got better and better and better. And no, I wasn't a great player, but I noticed that my skill set and my speed and strength was really helping me out. So, you know, it was through experience that I understood that that was going to be key to the turnaround in the program. It was a commitment and an off-season program that was pretty intense. So that was the biggest step.
Got it. You know, I think that when most people, I'd say outside of maybe the Bay Area and specifically the De La Salle community, most people look at De La Salle and say, wow, they, you know, the streak and all the things. And I know that that's not why you coached, or it was never really talked about within the program. But I think that ultimately comes back to the culture that you built within the football program. And specifically, this actually comes from one of your former players, Eddie Zuby. Where did that culture come from? You know, he wanted to know where this student athlete player led culture that you created that empowered these student athletes to lead the program. Where did that come from?
You know, I have to say it probably from my own experience. I think one of the things that helped me most as a coach was I never forgot what it was like to be in high school. And when I went into high school, I weighed 125 pounds as a freshman. And, you know, when I graduated, I weighed 180, and I was nowhere close to what I was, you know, as a freshman to when I was a senior. And I always believed, and throughout my entire career, that age 14 to 18 is the most dramatic change in a person's life. You see, you know, I've seen it every year. These kids come in as freshmen, they leave as young men. And, you know, it's just such an important part of a person's life. I think they set the foundation of what they're going to be going forward. Yeah. So it was a great place to be to influence. And, you know, I just thought that what we're going to do here is get the most out of our individuals, get the most out of our kids, not just physically, but mentally, emotionally, you know, responsibility wise, all the way across everything that makes you a good human being. We're going to work on it. And because I think that's when they're more receptive. People are more, the kids are more receptive to change at that time. And like I said, I think it's the most dramatic time in a person's life for change. So that was exciting to see all that growth and to see all that change in those kids. It was motivating for us as coaches.
That's great. That's it. A unique sense of motivation. I'm sure most people don't think of it that way. You know, we talked about before we started recording that we got a few ex-Spartans here within the E-Team sponsor, and one of them, John Larity, fondly remembers saying that you would say something to the effect of never underestimate the power of a teenager. And he said that really impacted him, and it gave him a sense of ownership when he was in the program. So to your point, definitely made an impact.
I think that was the key. I don't think kids, a lot of them, know what they're capable of doing.
Yeah.
And if you put the right people out in front of them, and if you have a plan and a program, you'll get that out of them. And they'll see it, maybe not right at that point, but they usually see it clearer once they're out. They go, wow, what a difference that made for my, you know, going forward.
So we'll bring back Eddie Zuby one more time. Eddie had said that, you know, when he showed up on campus in 1991 or whatever it was, he said the culture was already in place. It was already led by the student athletes. He wanted to know, was it a specific one student athlete? Was it a certain class prior to then that you felt like, wow, that it really clicked with this class, was it really just an eventual buildup from when things started in 1979?
Hang on one second. I got to cutting a tree down next.
Yeah. No worries. Hang on. No worries. No worries.
Okay. I'm back.
Yeah. No worries. No worries.
To answer your question, I think that it started from the first year I was there. Yeah. And, you know, I was young, and a lot of those kids had brothers older than me. And, I kind of went in with that attitude of, it's going to be all business here. I'm not going to get too close to these guys. You know, I wanted to have some distance so I could be objective. And so I set all the goals, and I set all the requirements, and all the, this is what went in for our first meeting. I had 25 kids in a classroom that showed up and just told them, I go, this is what we're going to do. And you want to be a part of it? Great. If you don't bother coming out. And I had that core group of guys that, they were willing to do that. They were willing to, I think they were tired of being bad. And I actually saw them the year before play Cal High, because I was scouting for Monta Vista. And even at that game, I was like, boy, is this team is horrible. You know, it was just, I knew it was a big job ahead of me.
Yeah.
And I just tried to take it one day at a time, and, you know, just, you know, work hard at it. And the kids responded, you know, they were like, they kind of knew I was no nonsense. And, you know, if you guys, I laid it out to them, if you want to be better, if you want to win, here's what we're going to have to do. We're tired of losing too.
Yeah. People become tired of losing, and backs against the wall, change attitude, lots to glean from that for sure. Coach, if you could do it all over again, or let's say you got back into coaching today, you're going to go take over another program, would you change anything in terms of the way you built the program at De La Salle? Would you change the way you do it today than you did back then?
I don't think so. I mean, I think you got to be who you are. And, you know, that was one of the things that I really didn't want to be. I didn't want to be some persona that I created or something like that. I just wanted to be me. And I had a real strong feeling of what was needed and just followed that. I think a lot of coaches have to follow their gut reaction and their gut feelings about stuff, because you know when things aren't right. I mean, and you know when kids aren't right, and you know when what you're doing as a coaching staff isn't right. And you just got to go with that. And, you know, you got to noodle on it for a while, but you have to make changes and you have to follow that instinct.
I love it. I love it. Coach, in terms of kind of, you know, another culture question here, the way you had things set up, but just from a leadership standpoint, you know, a lot of coaches that are, we'll say there's a, I think it's safe to say there's a leadership void in this country right now. And I think that creates a great opportunity for people to lead. And I think a lot of people would be listening to you speak today and say, you know, here's somebody who led for a long time. And I know leadership development was really at the core of your football program at De La Salle. What was it about the empowerment of those student athletes and really helping to develop leaders that kind of transcended football?
Well, we always thought that football was a vehicle. I mean, to becoming something better than your immediate self. And that covered all aspects, not just the physical aspect of it or the athletic aspect of it. It meant what it means to be a good teammate, what it means to be dedicated, what it means to treat other people with respect and dignity, what it means to be relied upon, just showing up on time, these type of things. And those are life skills. And we were very tuned into that for each kid. And, you know, we didn't let stuff get by us. You know, this is what we insisted on. And if they couldn't toe the line, then it was like, you're not cut out for this. Yeah. But the kids knew, they know, I think. And, you know, I think they trusted us. They said, look, these guys are, they mean business, and let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Let's see how far we can go.
Would you say, Coach, that there was maybe a core value? Like, would you say, like, at the foundation of it all was accountability? Was it trust? What would you point to in saying, wow, this was really the rock or the foundation of why we were able to empower these kids to lead the way they did?
It's a commitment. I think that's number one. You know, it's like, you know, a lot of kids go into play sports like, meh, you know, I'm going to give it a shot. And if I make it, I make it. And if I'm not that good, I'll hang on and just be a member of the team. You know, that wasn't going to fly. That didn't ever flew with us. You know, I always promised the parents when I met with them at the beginning of the year, I said, you know, I've got 50 kids on this team. And there's one kid on the team that's our best player. And there's one that's our worst player, number 50. And I told him, I said, your son's going to fall on that scale somewhere. And I go, but I do guarantee you one thing. We will make them better football players and better people, no matter what their skill level or no matter what, as long as they're willing to do the work. And we did. We coached everybody. We didn't separate the kids like, he's not going to play this year. Let's sit him on the sideline there and practice and let him watch. They were all engaged, and we coached every single one of them because we knew those kids were going to be our future too, you know, the younger ones. So coaching was it's a grind. It was a grind. I mean, you got to be vigilant the entire time you're out there on the field and off the field and doing your prep work. But, you know, it's plus if you shove kids aside, say, well, he's not going to help us this year. You know, we're going to have to concentrate more on these other kids. That creates, you know, bad feelings on the team. And those kids give up. And they're like, nah, I'm not going to play, so what do I care? But if you're coaching them every day in practice and they're an integral part of what you're doing, whether they're playing scout team, when we have our scout team out there, we coach our scout team in our technique. And, you know, we have guys in charge of this, coaches in charge of the scout team. So they're getting coached all the time. And we see dramatic improvement out of kids that are unathletic and, you know, really not, you know, top line football players, but actually get better and they get tougher. And that's what we promise our parents. And, you know, it's worked out. You know, we've had kids that have never started till they were seniors and then just have fantastic senior years. Yeah. And as starters. So it's gratifying.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's great to hear there's that reciprocation of commitment, the commitment from the coaching staff to coach every single player. And then in turn, those 14 to 18 year olds, the light bulb goes on and that commitment then turns around and I'm going to give it right back to this program and commit to be a part of it. So that's really special.
That's part of being a good coach. I mean, I went home every day exhausted. All of us did.
Yeah.
And you just come back the next day and it's like rinse and repeat. And being a football coach, well, a good coach, I think in any sport, as everyone who plays sports and whatnot, no, it to be good, it's a grind. It's really hard work. And a lot of people don't want to put in that hard work.
Yeah.
You know, so, and as a head coach, I did, you know, during the season, I worked every single day. Saturday, Sunday, I worked Sunday for 8 hours doing scouting, putting scouting reports together, trying to get a game plan together. And on Saturdays, we were down there, you know, lifting and watching film from our game. So it was a, you know, for 14, 15 weeks, it's 7 days a week, every day.
Yeah, quite the commitment for sure. Yeah, that's and the results showed that commitment was there. That's awesome, Coach. You know, one of the things that you were doing too, it wasn't just football related, right? You're the head football coach, but you're also you taught religion. You had to manage relationships with your presidents, your principals, your athletic directors, other coaches. What I guess how important were those relationships and the development of those relationships? And what could you share with coaches and athletic directors on, you know, private or parochial campuses that have to navigate those same waters?
Well, as far as an athletic director goes, I was really lucky to have Terry Edson. I mean, he was our defensive coordinator too, and he was so capable and organized. I mean, he took a ton off my plate, not just as a football coach. He took half the team. He coordinated the defense, special teams. I did the offense and did a lot of the paperwork and scouting and charting and stuff. But, you know, he also was our athletic director and he would be taking care of a lot of the paperwork. I'm not a paperwork guy, you know, and he was always doing a lot of my job. And I was lucky to have him. And I think that's the role of an athletic director is take something off your coach's plate so they could spend more time in preparation, more time getting the kids ready. But if you're mired down in paperwork and getting this in and that in, you know, it just takes away time and it takes away a lot of your focus too. So athletic director is key, you know, it's just really, really key. And the principals at our school, I've had some that were supportive and some that weren't really that supportive because, you know, it was, they kind of wanted, they didn't want football or athletics to dominate the school or be the, you know, when they think of De La Salle that, oh, it's a football school or it's an athletic, you know, it's this athletic school or anything like that. And it's much more than that. Because we operate out of the tenets and all the beliefs and all the mission statements of the school. And so I had a kind of a mixed bag on the principals. It depends on their personality and even kind of like what their interests are. But a lot of our principals saw a big value in having good athletics at your school, especially private school, because it'll attract kids to it.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's a good segue too. I know we didn't necessarily prep and talk about this in terms of a question, but specifically fundraising too, because, you know, that's what we do. But fundraising at a private school can be unique and have its own challenges. Every campus probably does it a little bit differently from whether it's advancement, development, to, you know, a booster club run by parents. What was it like to navigate those waters over the years in terms of working with advancement or booster clubs? I know, I think both of those existed at one point in time on the campus.
Yeah, we don't have a booster club. Never had a booster club at Dillis. Yeah. I think we did the first couple of years I was there, but, you know, I never had any really relationship with them as far as working with them. They were like a just an arm of fundraising, and, you know, I was kind of like, I didn't feel I had time to deal with all their what they were doing. I had my hands full. So, yeah, you got to have those unselfish people that are willing to help the program and not really take a lot of your time up. And they just want to do it out of the goodness of their heart and just wanted to, you know, advance kids and help kids out. So I think every school needs that for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Coach, I think that, you know, thinking about just kind of how things are today, the last 4.5 months have posed a number of different challenges across the world, but something that's definitely come to light over the course of the last handful of months is the conversation around social injustice and inequality, very prominent in conversations today. Kind of narrowing our focus back to football for a moment, but I think it's safe to assume this year, just about every football coach in the country, whenever their season is probably going to have to address the national anthem conversation with their team and their student athletes. Kind of put your coaching hat back on for a minute and say, you know, Coach, how would you approach this if your team or your locker room was divided, much like our country is now? And then also, how would you approach it if maybe your views were different than what the student athletes' views were?
I'm all for. I was raised during the civil rights movement. I was in high school. And my parents were, you know, World War II people, you know, in that era. So our philosophy was not really the same at all. And, you know, I always believed in the civil rights movement. I always believed in equality, all that. You know, I was part of it. I mean, I wanted to be a part of it. So, you know, I think the kneeling during the national anthem, things like that, signs of protest or signs of what they're standing for, I think it's totally correct and okay. And, you know, I would support any of it and even participate in it. Because you're not disrespecting your country. Or the national anthem, you're basically showing that it's really not applicable to everybody. And that's what this country's about. We're supposed to be lifting each other up and helping each other. And that's just not happening. It's not universal. And because of why, you know, this color of our skin or the origin of our, you know, ancestors, it's ludicrous. It's really ridiculous. And so, you know, if something like that would get me in trouble, so be it. I wouldn't care, you know. And that's part of being, you know, got to do what you think is right. And I think what they're doing is correct. I'm not talking about being against the police. My son's a policeman. And I'm just talking about systemic racism, which is legitimate. That's not a hoax. It's not fake news. It's part of our history, and it hasn't really gone away.
I think, Coach, you know, thank you for sharing that. And I think it's important for people to hear this because it's not going away. This conversation should be around for a while. And like you said, I think it's prominent for a reason. Looking back at the last 40 years of your coaching career, you know, in terms of just, you know, the general population of the football team, I mean, looking at De La Salle and knowing that you had kids come from all over, did any of these types of items ever come up, or I guess conversations ever come up in the past? And, you know, how did you address things like that if they did?
They didn't. Because we treated everybody the same and expected the same from everybody. And that's the beauty of sport. It's like, who cares where you come from or, you know, what you look like? It's what's inside of you. Are you determined? Are you moral? Are you motivated? Are you to treat with each other with respect? These are the things that we valued. We didn't care about any of the other stuff. Yeah. I mean, granted, some kids needed more help than others, but that's the beauty of sport. We never had any type of problem as far as that's concerned. Those kids knew where our framework was and what we stood for, without a doubt. And, you know, it was a great experience. I mean, we measured everything on how far those kids came as far as human beings. I mean, how much how hard they worked, studied, cared for each other. And, regardless of their talent level, we treated all those kids basically the same.
Great message. Great message, Coach. And I think as we look to wrap up, having spent 13 months at De La Salle as a 14-year-old, learning what the brotherhood meant. Maybe that's something that can, you know, kind of help us wrap up here today. Do you mind sharing with all the listeners and the viewers really what that brotherhood was? You know, as you were just explaining it, why the brotherhood was so important in the De La Salle football program.
It was important because we didn't really focus on winning at all. I mean, I never mentioned winning. We got to win this game. And, you know, of course, that's an understatement. You know, it's understood that if you want to, especially when you get in the playoffs, you want to move forward, you got to win. Yeah. I never emphasized that at all. We are always emphasizing accountability, academics, just the kind of people that they are and how they treat each other. What we listen to a lot of things. We understand kids' personalities. And if we see someone needs some prodding as far as like, you got to change some stuff about yourself. And we address that. I mean, it's like we spend an inordinate amount of time in the coach's office, one-on-one with kids. We pull them in immediately when we get a feeling or we hear something or they're treating a teacher poorly in class, this, that, or the other, they're not doing their homework. Into the office they come. And then we have to sit down and say, look, here's the consequences. And here's what you need to do. So we were concentrating mostly on if we can make them better people, if we can make them stronger people, if we can make them stronger athletes, better athletes, then all the other stuff just happens, then wins are the outcome. But that wasn't our outcome. But that was a sidebar of our mission was winning. It was like, oh, well, if we do all these things right, we win.
Yeah.
And we never even had to talk about winning. I never talked about winning. I talked about them doing their jobs and them being better people and improving as a person.
I can speak from experience, Coach, even just the short time that I was there, the accountability factor, that's something that I've carried with me after my short time there. And I know that knowing plenty that went through the 4 years there, that's something that they've taken with them and that brotherhood and that accountability to be better for the others that you work with or that are your teammates has been long lasting for a lot of people. Last two really quick questions, just kind of rapid fire here, have a little fun with it, but would be, you know, look back on, you know, your coaching career. What's the number one thing that you miss the most?
I loved being with the coaching staff. I was so blessed to have great coaches. You know, it was like we had fun. Maybe too much fun. We used to give each other just a horrible time, but it was in fun. They're just good. They're not just colleagues as far as coaches go or educators. We were all good friends and we held each other accountable too. One of my worst critics was Terry Edson. Held nothing back. You're like, what are you doing? What are you doing this for? How come you're doing that? Even during a game, you know, he'd fly by me on the sideline and say, nice call, you know, when it didn't work out, going for it on fourth down or something, we didn't get it. Oh, nice call, Lattiser. You know, I'm, dude, I'm in the middle of a game here. Can you wait till after the game? But that's the way he was. And and that has to happen on a staff too.
Yeah.
Hold each other accountable. And if you're not doing your job or you could do a better job, you can't be afraid to confront each other on it. And those guys used to confront me all the time. And but it was good. It made us better.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Sounds like it. Well, Coach, and then I promise, last question would be a message of positivity. You know, there's a lot of power in being positive, and I think right now a lot of people are looking for positive messages. What message would you send to high school football coaches out there that are watching and listening today to take back to their respective programs?
Just keep, you know that you're working for a higher cause. I mean, I probably could have had some opportunities to make more money and all that jazz, but I don't think you know, when you're in the service learning business, which we are as teachers, as coaches, I think you have even a better opportunity to be a teacher as a coach. And because kids want to be there, they want to, you know, they're voluntary. And so when you can see that growth and you can see positive things happening from your influence, you know, that's what life's all about. That's why we choose this profession. And, you know, a lot of people ask me, how can you coach high school football for so long? And I go, you know, this is where I was meant to be. This is where I wanted to be. And, you know, it's got to be in your heart. If it's not in your heart, then you can't be in it. And that's what happened too, is the last 2 years, I haven't coached the last 2 years. And, it just got to a point where I was like, this is too much of a job for me now. And it was time for me to get out, and that's okay. I did it long enough, and, you know, it takes a lot out of you, but, it's a labor of love. And the gratification of seeing the kids' growth, and when they come back and they're thanking you, and even when they were one of your most problem kids, they come back and they're like, hey man, I'm sorry about why I was like that. You're like, don't worry about it, man. You know, sure. Now, I mean, you know, that was part of the process. So it's a noble profession, and you approach it right, it can be very rewarding for a career.
Absolutely. Well, that labor of love, Coach, I know has had meaningful impact in hundreds, if not, you know, over 1,000 student athletes that have come through your program. I don't think there's any better compliment than to see, one, you've got former student athletes of yours that are now, you know, in the program, you know, coaching, leading it like Justin, but also two, going back to a game, it's astonishing. I mean, players come back all the time. They fill your sidelines. And they're back there because of that brotherhood and because of what the culture and the organization that you built. So I know that they're forever grateful for it. And we appreciate you coming on and sharing, you know, some wisdom with coaches that hopefully they can take this as a source of inspiration and go back and empower their programs in similar ways. So, Coach, really appreciate it.
If there's anything I could pass along is like, be proud of what you do. I mean, and winning, I know that people look at us and go, God, those, you know, or me, God, that guy won a lot of games, man. And De La Salle's won a lot of games and things like that. But winning was just a byproduct. It really is just an outcome of all the things that you do. And you don't even have to talk about winning. You know, it's just, it comes naturally if you're doing all the other things. And that takes a lot of work, but it's worth it.
Love it. Love it, Coach. Well, we appreciate you coming on. We'll definitely love to catch up with you down the road again. Appreciate all your time and all the wisdom that you shared. And Coach, continued health and safety to you and your family, especially your son in the police force. And thank him for his service. We appreciate you coming on today.
Thanks, Sean. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Coach. Have a great one.
Okay. Take care.
Take care.